And welcome to the Toddler Talk podcast, where we discuss all things related to speech, language and communication development in the early milestone years. My name is Camilla Marks. I am the founder and owner of Toddler Talk, an online support service for all parents who are interested in early childhood milestone development. This podcast consists of chats, discussions and interviews between me, the Toddler Talk team, and various other guests, professionals and parents, where we discuss best ways for parents to become the experts of their child's early milestone development. So let's get talking. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Toddler Talk podcast. My guest today is Claire Mullally. Claire is a senior speech and language therapist who is committed to providing evidence-based, up-to-date therapy services for children with speech and language challenges. Claire has graduated with a master's degree in speech and language therapy in 2013 from the University of Limerick. And during this time, she has worked in a variety of settings, including community speech and language services, intellectual disability services, and neurological rehabilitation. Claire has also developed a very exciting initiative called Inclusive Classrooms. The aim here is to train and support teachers who are working with children who have intellectual disabilities, but also attend mainstream schools. Claire is also a member of the Irish Association of Speech and Language Therapists. And last but not least, Claire has supported the development of the Toddler Talk Activity Box and the My Toddler Talk Passport, both topics which we discussed on our previous podcast. And today we are going to talk to us about how we as parents can use sensory social routines in our day-to-day lives to support, promote and enrich our children's speech, language and communication development. And I think one of the big points to make here, actually, Claire, is that when we discuss this whole area of sensory social routines, we're actually working on pretty much most of the building blocks of the passport and the activity box that we mentioned in our previous podcast.
We are, yeah. We're definitely going to be looking at those again and kind of working with them in terms of building in sensory social routines and bringing them together to make more sense for parents. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're using any sensory social routine in your day-to-day activities, you're actually targeting pretty much across all of those blocks, which is, as a parent, I think, a really nice thing to consider, because you're getting a lot more bang for your buck in the short time that you might have. And I suppose that's one thing that we always emphasize here, is that our goal, our aim, is to help parents become the most expert that they can be, but in a not adding more to their plate kind of way, but in a how can you enrich what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. And a sensory social routine is a really nice one, because it does give a lot of bang for your buck. And it's a routine when we have two people engaged, and in this case, a parent or grandparent and our child, in a joint activity. And in a sensory social routine, the attention is focused on the partner as opposed to an actual object, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So the aim with sensory social routines is to make sure that there's mutual pleasure and engagement in the activity. And they are the main themes where we will then focus on the play aspect of that. So what we're looking to do here is to optimize attention and arousal for learning. Would I be right there, Claire? Is that kind of...
Yeah, you would be. And I suppose what we're looking for, Camilla, is that, I suppose, that gleam in the eye, as I like to describe it, whereby the child and the adult are engaging with one another, and the child is really taking pleasure in sharing that attention with the adult. So it's what we refer to as that gleam in the eye. Where they're really engaged and really having fun interacting. And this may be short for even like a minute or two, or it can be prolonged for even 5 or 6 minutes, but it's to get it for a short amount of time and then to try to build it up over a number of activities.
Yeah. And so the gleam in the eye is that a whole area of, if you see that gleam in the eye, you just know your child's motivated to engage.
Absolutely. Right? That's right.
And the biggest thing about all of this is there's no right or wrong here. Just when you see the gleam in the eye, get right in. Get started. Yeah. And that idea that this whole area of reciprocity, which is this like to and fro, give and take, that speech and language and communication development always has a listener and a speaker. And even though the speaker may not be verbal right now, that we have someone who's listening to their speaking attempts, as it was, and reinforcing them. And the speaking, not necessarily again being talking, but as you said, the gleam of the eye to engage in some way.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And the child may not have to use words, but it's by looking at them, by really getting the interest from the child that they're really enjoying the activity. So it could be a touch, it could be like a hug, it could be like a push to do it again, mommy, or do it again, daddy. So they may not necessarily have the words, but you are looking to see what kind of actions or what kind of cues that they're giving the child, really, that the child is giving the parent to do it again, or that they're really engaged in the activity.
Right, because I've no doubt right now that all the parents out there are going, that sounds fantastic, guys. But what do you actually mean? What are you talking about? Right. So I suppose examples of what a sensory social routine might actually be are very simple things like peekaboo is a great one, because peekaboo sets up that gleam of the eye, that anticipation. Like, I think we always underestimate how rewarding the sense of anticipation is for a small child, and that even sense of that in and of itself is enough for them to start engaging with you. Things like itsy bitsy spider, the wheels on the bus, finger play, creepy fingers, even movement routines. So if you're doing airplane with food, for example, that's a great swing, chases, hide and seek, all of those things. When we say sensory social routine, what we're talking about here is there's this high level of social engagement with some sensory input somewhere, which also then kind of really enriches the actual engagement that's happening. As you said, which I think is really important, we're not looking for words here. When we say listener speaker, the speaking piece here from a small child can be the imitation, the turn taking, gestures, facial expressions, and for our early emerging speakers, they can be sounds or words as well. But all of those things are very genuine communication attempts. And if we give them some kind of feedback in the sensory social bit, we're going to see those building.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. When you work with parents, Claire, what are they like, in your opinion, what are the some of the perhaps pitfalls that they might fall into, do you think, if they're engaged in this, that maybe they just need to think about? Or
sometimes my experience coming back from parents is that they don't feel that they can do this. And I think parents may feel silly doing it. And I think this is something that parents have come again to be going, oh, I don't feel I can do this, or I feel silly, or I feel like I'm not going to engage them. And I think if we just pair it back to the basics, and it's literally just about sitting down on the floor and just being with your child, and then going, actually, let's do a peekaboo game, and make it very natural. And it could be very short, as I said at the beginning, or it could be the lovely back and forth interactions like you mentioned earlier, Camilla. But it's to get started and to get really into it and just allow yourself to be in that moment with your child for whatever length of time that it becomes. So that's one of the pitfalls that I've come up against, is that parents not feeling that they can get engaged in this, whereas I think it really is about just sitting on the floor and just going with it.
And I think what you talk about there is parents feeling silly sometimes. Actually, parents being silly is often the most motivating thing for their child to want to engage, you know.
Exactly.
And that's kind of bringing it to the place that well the most important ingredient for supporting these building blocks is the parent attention. Right.
Yeah.
And you will grab or get that gleam of attention from your child if you are a bit silly, because the more silly and the more different or the more quirky you might be. And guess what? If it's only you and your child, who cares? There's nobody else looking. That actually can be the magic. And if you become that, what we call like the motivating play partner, if you become from the land of behavior where I grew up, like if you become conditioned to some motivating play partner, then your child is always going to want to engage with you. You'll always see the gleam in their eye. And then what will happen is the attention you deliver is so rich that those building blocks that you're working on are going to get sort of built up quite quickly. Much
exactly.
Sort of speed your way.
And it's a nice thing, parents. What I say, Camilla, is that parents become the toy almost. So it's not just that we're using toys and all these lovely interactive toys with batteries, but suddenly now we're going back to the parents becoming the toy and really getting the parents to engage and make the funny faces and I suppose be silly in that environment with their child. So that I suppose they get that it's not falling back on the toy to do the work, that we want the parent and the child interaction. So it's effectively the parents becoming the toy instead of using a toy to do it.
I love that. That is a brilliant way to think about it, because if a parent becomes the toy and the parent has all of those social things that we're looking for here, like the vocalizing, the making eye contact, the pausing for listening, even if a parent is making those communication attempts and you've become really valuable as a toy in and of yourself, it's more likely that your child is going to start imitating you.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And when we see imitation then in these sensory social routines, what's happening is your child is learning all these social cues.
Exactly.
And all these social ways to engage. And so all of those building blocks, again, like we said, the expressive, the understanding, the imitation, the play skills, the social skills, they're all getting built on right across the board here by you yourself just becoming the best toy your child can have. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's a really nice way to put it, because I always get a little bit, I don't know, sad when I see parents and children out and about and a child's toy happens to be maybe a smartphone or, as you said, some kind of battery operated device. And that device isn't giving them all the social stuff that we want them to learn, right?
No, because there's no engagement from the toy. The toy is an object. And I suppose for us, we're human beings and we're socially equipped, and we need to be able to, I suppose, pass that on to our children and teach them the social skills and that interaction skills with people as well. So you're not going to get that from a toy. We need to be able to do it with one-on-one adult interaction, mm-hmm. and then we'll be able to move it into peer action, so peer-to-peer when they move into preschool.
Yeah, but now is when the building blocks need to be put
now
in place.
Happens. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's really important to remember, that there are times in our very busy day-to-day lives where we forget there's actually lots of opportunities that don't need us to do more work, as it was. Oh. They just might need us to put some devices down and turn and play and become the toy.
Exactly.
Become that sensory social toy. When you're working with parents, then Claire, like you've spoken about some of the pitfalls that parents fall into. And I think that one feeling that I can't do this or I look really silly, there's no wrong here, right?
No, there's no wrong.
No. You know, you won't break something.
No, I think parents kind of said earlier on, they feel, so particularly parents, you know, who are genuinely, maybe it's their first child and they feel, actually, I don't know how to do this. And I think if you, by just getting on the floor and following the child's lead, and then they might hide and then you continue it on. So it's a back and forth interaction. So I think even just being a little bit silly, or maybe going to the mirror and making some funny faces with them.
Yeah.
Starting that activity, being like in front of a mirror and sticking out your tongue, and then you're starting to get, you might get some imitation back from the child, you get some turn taking going, they might make some funny faces, they might do some funny gestures.
That's really interesting for us to consider, actually, because one of the things that we're looking at around the goals of sensory social routines is that we want to draw our child's attention to people's social and communicative cues, right? So things like eye contact, physical gestures, different postures. We want them to develop awareness of facial expressions and their ability to share emotional expression from face to face, right?
Yes.
So the more you increase your child's engagement and motivation to engage in this sensory social play stuff, the more you're drawing them towards developing these skills.
Exactly.
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah. And I think just drawing them into it, and as I said, it doesn't have to be, we don't actually need, and I think this is it's a good point as well, Camilla, is that we don't need any props to do this. It's that the parent is going to be doing this and the child is going to be engaged. So it's working with the child down on the floor, and maybe your guys are playing, as you said, some of the games you mentioned before, like peekaboo. And peekaboo can be done with like your hands. It can be then done with like a cloth and throwing it over your head. Or it might be done like diving into the couch and you jumping up and saying boo, and then dad running around the couch and then he doing boo. So it's can be done as part of the day-to-day activities of the child. So it doesn't actually have to be, oh, I need to kind of go and do my social sensory activities. I think we can do this very easily by just getting on the flooring and having fun with the child and kind of getting that gleam in the eye, looking for that gleam of the eye again, because they want you to do it again. They want you to play peekaboo again. And that's what a sensory social routine is. And then trying to build it, as you said, over a number of activities.
Yeah, and I think what I've often come across too, sort of when I've been working with parents who were struggling to get perhaps like even older kids to engage. So if you have children and you want to start teaching counting or colours or body parts or things like that, that if you start something in play and throw in the teaching piece within the play, that's when you're going to get the learning. And it's like, it's the same for parents. It's not that you have to go, right, now we're doing our sensory social routines, then we're doing our counting, then we're going to do our colors, then we're going to do our numbers. It's always like, well, you know what, if you start playing, it might just help you to understand that all the stuff that you're doing in the playing, if it's increasing motivation to engage and learn and imitate, then you can start throwing in some of the trickier stuff.
Exactly.
And also a lovely thing to think about here is when I work with parents sometimes in this whole area of like toddler tantrums, or we kind of call it compliance, but it's sort of like just following mum's or dad's instructions in really important moments, right? And when a toddler gets into that stuck stage, now we're not quite at code red, like code red's a different place altogether, but just before code red, you know, when you're hearing the first no or the first I know want, a great way to move it from that to that they will follow your instruction, or, you know, the transition to get out of the house or get into the car, whatever it is. If you start the instruction or the request with a sensory social routine, before they know it, they're engaged with you and you can go through this itsy bitsy spider and have all that going on. And now we're getting into the car and now you're in. Oh, the door is closed. Right. We can go, so that we can think as this being playful ways too to teach important things when kids get older and we actually need them to follow instructions.
Exactly.
At those, and it's always the time when you feel least like playing, isn't it? Like it's almost like, yes, do it. But actually, if we think, let's get the gleam in the eye before we get to the teaching piece, or before we get to the
because play is like how children learn, and that's their most valued way of learning. So I suppose in some sense, by directly teaching them through objects, sometimes that may not suit every child, but every child would love to play. So if you incorporate the sensory routine, they're going to want to engage with you because they really see this as a fun activity to do. And like that, again, and like you mentioned, Camilla, you're going to get a little bit more compliance in suppose in following instructions. Okay, so we're going to do this and then we'll do that. And you know what? Let's have dinner now. Let's sit up in our chair. And then we're going to make loads of funny faces. And so you will get more compliance by, I suppose, incorporating a social routine.
And I was just thinking about that because actually it's like, oh, and now you're on your chair and now you're sitting down and now we're going to do airplane. Oh, great. There goes the broccoli. There you go. It's in.
So it's fun.
And also it's learning that adults and children can interact and engage in that playful way.
So I think it's just what we were saying is that adults and kids like are really like, what we're trying to say is that like, parents sometimes miss this out because they think, oh, we need to specifically teach skills. And I think at this particular point, we just need to come back to the basics and try and sit down and try and just like, oh, I'm going to play like peekaboo, or I'm going to do ring a ring a Rosie and just go with the flow and sing some songs and get that engagement back and forth. That's what you're really looking for, Camilla. And as I said, the gleam in the eyes that are really, really happy to engage with you and want to engage with you.
Okay, well, Claire, thank you so much for joining us today. So hopefully the next day we're going to talk about looking at developing joint activities and joint attention through that. And hopefully if you can squeeze some more time into your busy schedule, you'll come back and talk to us about that. That'll be
Thanks
great.
Thanks very much, Camilla.
Thanks, Amelia. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.